right, what a wild 48 hours in Major League Baseball between the revelation surrounding Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter to the ongoing drama at the Major League Baseball Players Association, which certainly has raised the possibility that Tony Clark could be in his final few days as head of the association. There's a lot to talk about. We'll be joined by Jeff Passan later on in the show to delve into that. But gotta say, it's been a real treat having Kevin Barker down in Florida. This is Kevin's last day in Florida. He'll be back here beside me tomorrow, weather permitting. Well, we actually have we have some news to talk about right away. News in that it happened last night, but of course, one of the storylines we've been following all spring, Kevin, is the composition of the roster. The Jays have a plethora of infielders in camp, and yesterday they moved one of them. Santiago Espinal traded to the Cincinnati Reds for a pitcher, Chris McElvain, who I'm sure the khakis will take over and try to turn him into the next Mitch White. Well, come on. I mean, that appears to be the thing. It's a guy they know.
He does.
Guy they want. Apparently, they wanted to draft. So, I mean, they'll put him in the lab and flip a few switches and put a few electrodes on him and transform him into a 98-mile-an-hour flame-throwing behemoth. Anyhow, enough of that. Santiago Espinal traded to the Cincinnati Reds. That clears a 40-man spot on the roster the Jays need for one of the catchers they're going to add. They're going to need to add to replace Danny Jansen. And there's still another move that will need to be made if they want to get one of Votto, Escobar, and Vogelbach on the roster, as we believe they do. Look, Kevin, we've talked about Santiago Espinal a lot. I think it became very clear as spring training went on that Ernie Clement had played his way into the favorites role for that spot, but this guy was in the All-Star game a couple of years ago. You know, before we talk about the deal and its ramifications, I know you've talked to Santi at the park a number of times. What happened there, Kevin? Did he get exposed? Well, did he get exposed by playing too much?
Maybe not. I don't think that was it. I think sometimes guys are just not everyday players. And, you know, his first half was really good. That's why he made the All-Star team. His second half was not. And that sort of shone a light on, you know, exactly what they had in Santiago Espinal. And, you know, when you're looking for, you know, an everyday guy, he needs to go out there and show you that he can deal with, you know, the longevity 162 game season. And for whatever reason, Santi can't do that. It's, you know, look, I just think they did him a solid. They could have sent him down. They could have sort of, you know,
he had options. You're right.
Yeah, swept him under the rug and sort of forgotten about him, but they didn't do that. They did him a solid, sent him to a good team. I mean, hey, the Reds are up and coming. They're going to be fun, right? They got athletes running all over the field. And, you know, in that division, it ain't the best. The Reds got a chance there. Santi's got a chance to, you know, at least go and contribute to a good team. Not a great team, a good team, which is all you can ask if you're Santiago Espinal. He's a good kid. They did him a solid, and I think if you're Santi, you have to take this and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sort of the you know, the nice and, you know, the friend of Boba shit, that's over. Now you're going to a different organization. I've done this. You go to a different organization. It's put up or shut up time. Because if not, they will send you down. They will release you, and your career basically will be over. So yeah, it's sort of that time in Santi's career where he's got a nice little clean slate here. He can go and sort of trying to reestablish himself as a, I don't want to say everyday guy, but can give you 5 days a week and be decent enough to, you know, to warrant a organization and a manager putting his name in a lineup. So hopefully, fingers crossed, a great kid. Like, nobody argues the kid he is. And I think this is a long time coming. Last year, you could tell, you know, from what I'd heard, his agent was asking for trades, and it just sort of the writing was on the wall. I don't think this happened in spring training. This happened last year. So good for the organization. Good for Santi. Hopefully everything works out the way it's supposed to work out.
Yes. And the Reds right now have a need for middle infielders. They've got a ton of middle infielders, but they've also got some injury concerns. So you're right. It's a great opportunity for him. He's going to join a team. He will play. He doesn't look like he's going to be a utility guy. It looks like at least at the start, they'll need him to get over the injury situation. Well, and
last point, Jeff, yes. Coming into spring last year, he got out of shape. I don't, you know, sometimes we talk about that gaining weight and, you know, his lower half had gotten bigger. You know, I think some other things were getting bigger along with his lower half. And when you sort of get out of shape with conditioning, you know, the bat gets slower. The first move gets slower. You know, the arm strength gets slower. That's why, you know, putting him at shortstop was a bigger of an issue. He's taken care of a few more of those things. I've seen him here in camp up until he got traded. He looked a little bit better. You know, he was throwing balls from shortstop. I was watching on the half field, and it looked like his arm strength was a little bit better, right? The ball was carrying the way it was supposed to be carrying, and it wasn't that way. So, you know, sometimes you got to take a long look at yourself in the mirror and say, maybe it's me doing this. Maybe it's just not the organization sort of, you know, sort of putting me under the rug. And he went home and took care of some things again. This is best case scenario for Santi. The organization could basically send him down and forgot about him. Mm-hmm. And it would have been real tough because of who he is to make up for that. They didn't do that. And they're giving him an opportunity to go to a different organization, a good organization, and hopefully he can make some run there.
Yeah, the finances of this, such as they are, that the Jays clear $2.725 million in payroll. So if you look at the math, they are $10 million shy right now of the second luxury tax threshold. Not that I think the money was necessarily a factor in here, but both Vogelbach and Votto, who, as we've said, are will probably end up being put on the roster, at least one of them. They could earn $2 million at the MLB level. So, I mean, they gave themselves a little more wiggle room. They cleared a backlog. And, they've got more moves to make. And, you know, just looking at it was pretty obvious, I think, Kevin, that the fact that you can foresee a platoon of Davis Schneider, pardon me, and Kevin Biggio at second base, the fact that Ernie Clement gives them a little something off the bench that they don't have, that contact ability. Plus, he can play the outfield. They're comfortable. We talked about him at shortstop. I mean, he looks like he's a guy who can make all the routine plays. It sort of stood to reason. I think we decided about 3 weeks ago, if you listed, and you know, we're not the only ones that saw this. I mean, Joe Siddle talked about it yesterday. But if you kind of listed the guys, it really did seem as if Santiago Espinal was sort of the was the guy in the outs here.
Yeah, if you're Santiago Espinal, you're sending the Blue Jays organization a Christmas card. Again, I've been in positions like this. I mean, I'm not coming off all – I never came off an all-star campaign and sort of ended up where Santi ended up.
No, but you were a guy one time and
– could have forgotten about him. Like, they could have basically said, enough of this. You're not as good as Ernie Clement. I mean, we're trying to win a championship here, and, you know, it's just sorry about your luck. They didn't do that. They are sending him to an organization that's pretty good. It's going to be relevant, and – it's sorry about the noise. It is basically in my lap, that lawnmower. So yeah. I apologize for that. But
if it's in your lap, I'd move.
I can't. I'm locked in.
Cross your legs if it's in your lap, at least.
They can move. I'll never move. They'll never make me move. I'm bigger than they are. That's but true. You only get so many chances, and I think this is probably Santi's big chance to go and do some things. I mean, he's going to Great America Small Park. Like, he could backspin a homer to right center at that place. Boy, that place is good hitting. So hopefully it works out. He's a great kid. I'm rooting for him.
All righty, let's talk about the pitching. Kevin Gausman took part in live BP yesterday, had an up and down simulated game, if you want to call it that. I'm just looking at this here. He threw how many pitches? 36 pitches. He hit 97 on the gun. The next, what are the plans for Kevin Gausman next? And what are the Blue Jays thinking now, Kevin, about where they might put him into the rotation? Do they have a better sense of what his timetable looks like?
Well, I think he's going to do another one of those 25th, right? Maybe trying to get him up to closer to 60 pitches, that would be probably three ups and downs, which is, you know, that's a big deal, right? You get the heart rate going, you go over, you sit down, you cool off, and you get the heart rate going again, just to see how he handles it, how you bounce back, right? You know, he's thrown a lot of pitches. We continue to say that when you're getting up in age there and you've had a hiccup, with things that are going on with your body, you need for a player to see that they're happy with the velocity. That's the first step, because he's a two pitch guy. He needs that. And just so happens he's walking right by. I just waved at him there. So he looks, you know, happy and healthy. And, you know, it seems like the next step will be closer to that 60 to 70 pitch mark. See how he bounces back from there. They were, the best I understand, give him the extra day, right? You sort of do the math to where it goes from the 25th to the 30th. I don't think that will be the 30th, right? That would be game three of opening the season. It would sound like it will either be the fourth game of the season or the Yankees series. Seems like, so, you know, basically they're trying to, because they want to keep him on a certain routine, that they don't want to give him, you know, a couple of extra days. They only want to give him the extra day. So, you know, it depends on how it sort of works out with the other parts of the rotation and who you'd have to skip. And you know, you want to keep those guys in a certain routine, especially early in the season. So you're almost, it's like he's either throwing game four to open the season, or they would skip him and he would make some kind of simulated start here in Dunedin at the complex to get him to the Yankee series, right? So he'd make a start somewhere in that Yankee series or game four. It's up in the air. You know, the person that I talked to would not tell me the plan, which, you know, I poke and prod at it to try and get the plan out of these guys. They won't give it to me. I mean, it's worth a try, right?
Why not?
But it seems like somewhere around that mark, it's game four. That's the extra day. So, right, he'll go from the 25th to either the 30th or the 31st. Doesn't sound like it'd be the 30th because of who they want to pitch against the Rays, right? They want to keep all the other guys in the same kind of routine, which would be Berríos, Bassett, and Yusei Kikuchi, and then they figure out Gausman. So, you know, there's some wiggle room there because of the depth they do have and the routines that they're trying to keep. But look, he looks healthy and he looks happy. That's the only two things that matter, because if they're going to go anywhere, he has to be a big part of that.
So we await further information on Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson. Maybe we get information on Romano tomorrow, according to the Blue Jays timetable. That would seem to be most likely. You know, look, it's what, we're a week away from the start of the regular season. Your gut kind of tells you that one of the two at least probably won't break camp with the team. You know, maybe it's not serious, but your gut would tell you that Swanson might be a little farther away than
your
Jordan
gut's
Romano.
You're right.
Yeah, and
yeah, your gut's telling you right.
And Romano, I mean, you know, again, look, if he misses the first series against Tampa, you can figure that out. But what does this mean for the bottom of that bullpen? Because I think we can kind of figure out who steps up in the different roles in the short term. But what about that, you know, that last spot that I think in the past we just assumed Bowden Francis gets a start, Mitch White will be in the team in some capacity. Does this open the door for a Nate Pearson or a Zach Pop or, I don't know, maybe one of the minor league guys that are still in camp?
Yeah, I don't think it's a minor league guy. Again, I get back to that. There's some urgency here. Like, it's a quiet urgency. They understand they have to get off to a good start. They can't be trying to figure out roles and what's best for young dudes. Like, that's just not part of it early on here. They have enough guys that have been around that they have trust in, and I think that would start with Pearson. He would be the first guy that would make the team. Sounds like if Swanson is not here, it's Pearson first, and it's either Brendan Little or Zach Pop. And, you know, I think Zach Pop is probably the last one of those. I ask, they're not afraid to take three lefties because they think Little, Cabrera, and Tim Mesa can all get righties out, which is a big deal, right? Because it's a three batter rule. You got to be able to get a couple righties out, or at least one righty out. They think all three of those can do that. little, you know, is, again, we talked about this yesterday, a little bit of a head case when it comes to just letting it get out of control. It's okay to throw ball one or ball two. How do you control itself correct mentally? His part is not so much physical or mechanical as it is mental. Like, he talks to himself, he overthrows. The pitches are non-competitive. They can't have that. Like, it's just you can't have that. So I think there's decisions that will be made when it comes to who they take. And if Romano's not there, which I've been told seems like he might miss the first couple of games, after that he'll be raring and ready to go. Mm-hmm. Like, it just doesn't seem like it's a giant deal. It seems like it's more precautionary. You know, you start seeing swelling, a dude throws that hard, it means that much to a team at the back end of the bullpen. You got to be real careful. And if he's missing the first couple of games of the season, you'd rather miss those two than a month or two.
Absolutely.
So you got to be real careful. And, you know, the swelling part of it is concerning. I think they've taken care of that, at least the people that I've talked to, that, you know, they're really monitoring that and making sure that he will be ready to go sometime, maybe first series, at least in Houston, worst case scenario. So I don't think you got to worry about Romano, but it is that sort of window where it's the Pearson, Pop, Little thing. Those are the three guys that you're sort of trying to figure out best will help, you know, get your team to where they're ultimately trying to go. I think they feel like they can lose this thing in April, Jeff. That is at least the thing that I'm getting here, is they're going to be real careful about who they take north or who they're taking on the road, you know, to give the ball to. These games all matter. They understand that. Like, the Yankees are better. The Orioles might be the best team in the American League. Like, they understand these things, right? You got the Rangers to deal with. You got the Mariners to deal with. Like, there's a small window to screw this up. They understand it. There's urgency. Every coach I talk to, it's like it's a big deal. How you make up the lineup, you know, it matters who's hitting fifth. It matters lefty, righty, that kind of thing when it comes to 5 through 9. It matters sort of that last guy in the pen. It matters how you use Mitch White. They're going to be careful. Like, they ain't giving these games away because it's early in the season. And, again, if you're a Jays fan and you're covering this team, you love hearing that. You love it. At least I do.
All right. So, as I mentioned, you are going to be back here tomorrow. You've been down there for a couple of weeks. Give me the three things you've come away from Florida thinking, wow, that's better than I thought it would be. And give me a couple of things that are concerning you.
Well, the age of the rotation, I think that's one of them. You know, what's Bassett going to give you? What's Gosman going to give you? They're getting older. I mean, Bassett's 35, Gosman's 33. I mean, Gosman, you know, even at 33 and as experienced as he is, because of the urgency, got it ramped up too soon, right? That's an issue. How do you control that? How do you get the best out of Kevin? I don't think they can go where they want to go without Kevin. So that's one of the concerns. The bullpen, look, I don't think there's a giant concern there, but there is for me concern of how you use Chad Green, right? Is his stuff good enough to pitch late in games? Are you okay throwing him out there against a couple lefties, right? They don't have the breaking ball. Is the slider good enough? Is the tunnel long enough? Is it break enough? Does he throw hard enough? Is he a visiball there? Like, only the batter will tell you in big-time action against big-time lefties. That's a little bit of a, you know, concern may be strong, but there is some, you know, you got to one eye it. Are you fisheye really happy about throwing him out there? So that would be one thing I think if you're a Jays fan, you're looking at. A couple of the happy things. Look, if you're not happy about seeing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. getting it down and getting it singing to the pull side, I don't know, you know, how else you could be that way. You saw him even yesterday taking the hitting the homer. I mean, that's a thing, boy. Like, even being able to get to the finish last year consistently, he just couldn't do it. Too many parts, right? When you see the hands moving, and I don't know if you can see me, I'll stand up a little. Then when they're moving like down in here, that's a bad thing. They're not. They're in here, right? It's just a little bit of – of this instead of a lot of this, which he's not doing here in spring training. I hope people could see that they were watching on TV. So that's something he's controlled, which enables him to, you know, he's not a stretch guy. Stretch just sort of takes care of everything. He's not that. So he needs timing at the point of collision, which is what he's trying to do. So to see him pulling baseballs in the air the way he's doing it, man, again, and you're a Jays fan, and I talked to him down here, they're happy to see that. So that's one thing you're taking away. And Dalton Varsho and George Springer, I'm lumping them together. George is sort of the right-handed Dalton Varsho. Do you expect George Springer to hit 30? I probably don't. Like, he's been around a long time. I don't know if he has enough bat speed anymore to consistently, once you start facing the elite guys in the American League trying to get you out, can he take a fastball in the black and yank that thing for a homer? I don't know if we could see that or not. But, look, we're seeing enough of it that will give you hope that, you know, he could be that 25-plus guy. Not that 30-plus guy, that 25-plus guy. And if he does that, he'll drive in maybe – you know, hopefully 80 runs. And Dalton Varsho, he's pushed him into putting him in the five hole. Talk to the manager. Like, everything he's done mechanically, mentally, you know, who am I to say that Donnie Baseball is not doing enough? He seems to be telling everybody, at least Dalton has, that, you know, Donnie Baseball speaking his language. It's showing on the field. I mean, he hit a home run the other day that went, you know, 3 miles. That's a great thing, right? The balls that he should be hitting a long way, he's doing that. That will tell you that he's not thinking mechanical. It's not robotic, right? I put it down. My hand should go here. If I do that, mentally it's telling me that the barrel should end up where it's supposed to end up. You don't see that. It's I get it down, I let it eat. It's, you know, happy to see that. So there's a couple of things that are happy. I think defensively they'll be fine if they stay away from the dumb mistakes. And I don't want to hear anybody calling in on Jay's talk blaming the manager for, say, George Springer in the first inning against the Orioles trying to take third with Bo Bichette up. That's not the manager. That's not the third base coach. That's the players. If they suave a little bit on that, take a step back, understand the situation and who you're playing, they should be okay. Take care of those little mistakes. Because you're a good team. Are they a great team? Not in my mind. They're a good team. That's why good teams have to do all the little things almost perfect. Clean those things up. And I think because of the pitching staff and the way they play defense, they'll be okay.
Kevin, is there much talk down there amongst the players or amongst people, you know, in air quotes, about the relative lack of activity this offseason by the front office? No, they brought in IKF and Justin Turner. It's not like they didn't do anything. But they brought in IKF and Justin Turner. And, of course, we all know about the whole thing with Shohei Ohtani. I mean, is there any talk about, I wish they'd done a little more for us? Because you're right. These guys, Bo and Vlad, you know, there's a sense of urgency here. There's only 2 more years where they're guaranteed to be here. That doesn't mean their career's over, and they're going to make a lot of money off, obviously, when those 2 years are over. But there's got to be a sense here, doesn't there, that this window of opportunity is really, it's not as open as it used to be. And I'm just wondering if there's kind of a disappointment that the front office didn't do more for them.
Yeah, every time I'm around fans, I hear it all the time. I've never heard it from a player. I've been here now, 11 days? Mm-hmm. I have not heard one player, which they shouldn't. You have a job.
Yeah.
Your job is not to worry about what the front office is doing. You know, if you can look at it and flip it on its other end, they have confidence enough in the guys that are here that they think that if you live up to what they think you're supposed to be doing, the team will ultimately end up and have a really good season. Now, if like I have, you walk through the stands in Dunedin during a baseball game, 90% of the fans will walk up to you and say they need to do more. Why haven't they brought in another bat? That's a big topic of conversation. And look, I think it is what it is, right? You get better Dalton, you get a better George Springer, you get Turner hitting in the spot he's supposed to be hitting in, and they continue to play the defense the way they're supposed to do, and they don't have a couple of guys in the rotation that are out for a long period of time at the same time. They should be okay. They will be fighting for a spot. Not the American League East. There, in my mind, is a giant separation between the Orioles and the Jays. Mm. I don't know about you, Jeff, but I've been up close and personal with the Orioles. Holy moly. Like, the only thing that could beat the Orioles is the Orioles. And they're oozing it, and they believe it. Like, you know, I've been on some winter ball teams. I've never really been on a big league team that creates a winning habit. You can just feel it with the Orioles. Like, everybody that comes to the plate is just like, we're fighting with two strikes. We're going to run every ball out the way we're supposed to run it out. We're going to throw to the right base because we have more talent than you do. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's just that feel to it. And now you have Burns as your number one dude. Man, it's going to be a lot to handle for a lot of teams in the American League. So Yeah, I think, again, it gets back to do with what you do. Don't try to do too much. You've been around long enough to understand that. And it's sort of that time where, you know, forget about what everybody else thinks and come out here and do your job. And hopefully having a better Vladdy, having a better George, having a better Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk looks like he's got a plan at the plate. You can do those things. Maybe Danny Jansen will be back. I just saw him. I saw him block a ball yesterday. He's not throwing anything, but I saw him blocking, and I had a mini conversation with him. And he's frustrated. Like, he wants to help the team. I think the quicker adjustments when it comes to wearing things on your hands that you're supposed to be wearing, it's just little things like that. It just will make you scratch your head that they need to clean up. To clean these things up because they have talent. They should be okay, and they should be in it, and they should be relevant. And if you're a fan, I think that's all you can ask for.
Last question before we let you go. We spend a lot of time early in the spring sort of poking around this whole, you know, the whole idea of Don Mattingly as offensive coordinator and this kind of individualized approach to team offense, or this idea of a team concept of offense. And it's always, again, it's not football. You don't have a defensive and offensive coordinator here. But there was a lot of talk about some sort of hitting cultural change, if I could kind of put it into a broader thing. Are you detecting that, and do you have a better understanding of it now?
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, whoever's saying that has never been in a locker room before. Like that, baseball as a hitter doesn't work that way. What if I can't hit a breaking ball? Why the hell would I go up and look for a breaking ball? Wouldn't. Like I had plate awareness issues on the fastball end. It destroyed me from being a big leaguer for a very long period of time. It's very individual. I can't be talking to Dalton Varsho like I talked to Bo Bichette. Like it just can't happen that way. And again, it gets back to that, right? Where if I get Vladdy and I watch him in spring training and he gets a ball, just watch his takes. What's the pitches he's taking? That's an individual thing. Because of the Rogers Center, the ball don't carry to right center. Why would I try and hit the ball over there early in counts? I wouldn't. It's not smart. So I'm looking for a ball that I can get the head out and create damage to the pull side in the air. That's the thing you're seeing. It's very individual. George Springer's the same way. Bo Bichette is a don't lean back on quadrants because I can't hit it and have it go where I want it to go. That's something you work on. That's not something that Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who just walked by, is going to work on because they're individual offensive players. And like whoever says that just is not up to par when it comes to what goes on in a clubhouse and how you're supposed to speak to individuals as hitters. Just doesn't work that way, Jeff.
Yeah, and I've always kind of when I hear people talk about, there's a lot, there's talk about we got to drive a guy in from second base more, but I mean, yeah, that's kind of the game.
Don't
that's
put something, Dalton Varsho in the cleanup spot. Yeah. How about that?
I mean, that's something that guys
that's
would
what
be
you do.
Getting guys over and getting them in. I guarantee you that they talked about that in the 40s, in the 50s, and the 60s. I'm kind of with you. It's great if there's nothing wrong with having a culture where everybody's happy and got everybody's back and all that. That's fine. But I'm more with you. I need to see individuals do what they can do best. And if you do that,
Yeah, and again, it gets back to that Turner thing. It's not a sexy move, and it's not Ohtani. But wouldn't you rather have Justin Turner hitting cleanup than Dalton Varsho?
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, it's a big difference between him hitting fourth and fifth.
Yeah.
Like, hey, it's a big difference. So, yeah, I think you having the right guys in the right spot. So when they come up, they are at their best because they've had experience doing it, and they know how to do it. You don't have to try and hit the three-run homer all the time. You don't have to try to overswing all the time. It's about just putting the barrel on the ball, staying in the big part of the field, and a lot of the times it will work out because you have a sound mind and a sound mechanical approach. It's baseball 101, and just sometimes it's just like, these khakis and all these smart people run these teams, way overthinking it. When you just go down to, is that dude good enough to actually get it done? And right now, the first four guys, and you can throw in Dalton and you can throw in Alejandro Kirk because of the way they've looked in spring, seem to look like that they have a decent enough idea that they're going to score more runs. If they don't score more runs, then we're going to have a whole different conversation about the All-Star break.
Mr. Barker, as always, thank you so much for doing this. We look forward to seeing you back here in our studio tomorrow.
Absolutely. I just want to thank everybody that I've had conversations with down here, Dunedin, and when I went to the field with my son, when I walk around Dunedin, when I go to the beach, anywhere I go, Jays fans welcome me with open arms. They love this show for some reason. Maybe it's you. I don't know.
Gotta have
any
me.
Idea.
Certainly
hopefully
not you.
Hopefully we've done enough here in the 10 days that I'm down here to keep you informed and up to date on what's going on and who's making the team and why they're making it and, you know, who's pitching and why they're pitching and all the things that will help fans be tuning in to the Toronto Blue Jays. This is ultimately why we're here. So I want to thank everybody and everybody that I've met. It's been a lot of fun.
All right, Barker, travel safely. We shall see you tomorrow. Thanks for this.
Absolutely.
See Kevin ya. Barker, co-host of Blair and Barker. And a reminder tomorrow, yes, Kevin will be back, but we'll also be going to the back leg line tomorrow. Your numbers are 416, or your number is 416-413-3959. You can, well, it'll give you an opportunity to pick Kevin's brain after 10 days down in Florida. Also a reminder that effective Tuesday, we will be moving to 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. And, so we're looking forward to that and looking forward to getting the regular season started. Technically, the regular season's already started, of course, because the Padres and Dodgers opened the season in Seoul, South Korea, the Seoul Series. Quite an entertaining game. I mean, a great game today if you're fans of offense. San Diego outscoring L.A., but all of that has kind of become secondary in the last 48 hours to the revelation that Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, well, he's had his gambling debts. He's had gambling debts covered, it appears, according to reports and according to documents that ESPN has seen. Well, it appears as if somehow Shohei Ohtani, the player, has helped, either he's helped cover gambling debts that have resulted from his interpreter's involvement, or as Ohtani's people have said, the interpreter stole something in the neighborhood of $3 million, $4.5 million from him. It's a complicated story. You all know, of course, but baseball and betting. Now, there's no indication here, first of all, that Shohei Ohtani himself bet on anything. There's no indication that there was any betting on baseball. Mark Boffler, our producer, made an interesting point. I just assumed it was legal to do that in California. It's not. So basically, you've got a bookie involved here. It's getting very complicated, and of course, it's an issue for Major League Baseball and Commissioner Rob Manfred. So Jeff Passan will join us to discuss that and some of the drama with the Major League Baseball Players Association as well. All that ahead, it's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The San Diego Padres beat the L.A. Dodgers 15-11 this morning in Seoul, South Korea, the second of two games, part of Major League Baseball's Seoul Series. It was a hell of a game to watch, but really, it and I would argue just about everything else in Major League Baseball is kind of secondary right now to the two stories that we're going to focus on with Jeff Passan. I want to talk to Jeff about the drama, the Major League Baseball Players Association, which is, odd to say the least. If you've spent time, well, if you have a long memory of MLBPA politics, it's kind of odd to see this situation develop. But the other story, of course, the firing of the Los Angeles Dodgers interpreter for Shohei Ohtani on Wednesday after questions surrounding $4.5 million, at least $4.5 million in wire transfers sent from Shohei Ohtani's bank account to a bookmaking operation. Shohei Ohtani, of course, played today. Reporters tried to get comments from Shohei after the game today. He did not comment. He was let out of the clubhouse and essentially, according to the Japanese reporters there, wished everybody a good night. Jeff Passan of ESPN joins us. Tisha Thompson of ESPN did a lot of the reporting on this story, Jeff. But, you know, look, baseball, gambling, a couple of things need to be said here. First of all, there's no direct indication Shohei Ohtani gambled on baseball. Indeed, his interpreter said that he didn't gamble in baseball. It was soccer and NFL and NBA. But the backstory here where initially Ipe Mazahara, who is, in addition to Shohei's interpreter, his longtime friend, comes out and tells ESPN that, well, you know, what Shohei did, good friend, covered my gambling debts, which, you know, probably not what you want to do if you're Shohei Ohtani. That somehow turns into a story. That somehow turns into a story that Shohei Ohtani, that somebody has stolen at least $3 million from Shohei Ohtani. I mean, Jeff, this doesn't look good. The commissioner's office has to at least investigate this, do they not?
Yes, and I believe they're going to. But we also have to remember, Jeff, there's a federal investigation going on into this illegal bookmaking ring. Mm-hmm. And I think Major League Baseball, as it tends to do when there are criminal cases, is going to let that sort of play out. Let's remember, they were investigating Trevor Bauer almost in parallel with the police in Los Angeles as they were looking into potential alleged sexual assaults. And, you know, by the time that investigation wrapped up, that's when the penalty was levied on Trevor Bauer. I'm not suggesting that there's going to be any penalty levied on Shohei Ohtani. I think what we need to do, and I know this is a big ask, and I know that you know, the way social media works now, it's not going to happen. But what we need to do is take a deep breath and say it is really early in the process. Mm. Now, that being said, the way that this whole thing unfolded was bound to invite skepticism and was bound to lead to cynicism, because on Tuesday they had one version of the story. And on Wednesday, it was a completely different version. And when you go from one to the other in the fashion that this story did, as Tisha Thompson's brilliant reporting uncovered, and you don't fill in that gap, you don't have transparency, there is no explanation, you're going to have people who are speculating wildly. Now, there's an explanation for that, of course, which is that if, in fact, there was a massive theft, as Shohei Ohtani's lawyers alleged Ipe Mitsuhara committed, then there are going to be charges that are pressed, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is going to play itself out in the legal system. And by talking about it and being transparent at this point, you could potentially poison the well there. I plead for patience. I know I won't get it. I understand that, you know, Shohei Ohtani is going to be embroiled in this for a really long time. And it's understandable that people are interested in it because he's the best player in the sport. He's the biggest name in the sport, one of the biggest names in all of North American professional sports, all sports, frankly, around the world. So when he's embroiled in the middle of a controversy in the fashion that he is right now, it's just our nature, I think, to sit there and try and explain away this situation that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right. And I think we need, I should mention for background here as well that, and this, I got to tell you, this is my producer, Mark Boffo, and I were laughing about this. You know, sports betting's legal in nearly 40 states. It's illegal in California. I didn't know that. Like, I just assumed one of the things that stood out when I read the story was, oh, sports betting is illegal in California. I just assumed that you could bet in sports in California. But you're right. The fact that Ohtani's people tried to spin the story one way and then had to reverse field, it does invite skepticism. My question to you is this, though, Jeff, like, you know, the Dodgers have given this guy, what is it, $700 million or whatever it is. Like, is I understand that Shohei's innocence. I get all that. But, man, if I'm the Dodgers right now, and I'm just watching Dave Roberts on TV, if I'm the Dodgers right now, I got to kind of be just shaking my head a bit. Because you're right. This isn't – I don't think this is going to disappear in a week.
No, it's not going to disappear in a week. And it's not going to disappear in a month. Like, it may not disappear in a year.
I don't know if there's an issue with due diligence. I just don't know. But it really doesn't look good for the Dodgers. I don't think it does.
No. The whole thing, just reeks right now. And I think as time goes on and we get a better sense of what actually happened, and I think that's why it's important for us to recognize this is not a situation that's going to be swept under the rug, because I'd like to believe that federal authorities and potentially local authorities, if it comes down to any sort of charges for the quote unquote massive theft, they have no incentive to sweep this under the rug.
Right.
Major League Baseball does, but this is outside the scope of Major League Baseball now. And beyond that, I think Major League Baseball's credibility would be on the line as well if that were to be the case. Now you can look at how the Houston Astros scandal was handled, and you can look at cases in the past with Major League Baseball where it's like they have the incentive to want this to go away as quickly as possible. But if you're looking at this logically, you can't.
Oh, I think
this is not going away.
Yeah, you were talking. I was thinking about, first of all, this is a federal investigation, but you know, baseball's other scandal, the Balco scandal, had its beginning was an investigation into income tax violations, right? And that unearthed all sorts of things. So if you're I'm not making a connection here, but what I'm saying, when you have these things, you don't know where they're going to go, because the government's going to, if it's got various, if it branches off into various things, the feds are going to pursue that. They're going to follow it wherever
goes. Yeah, and listen, you've got wire transfers here for $4.5 million. It's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do when you're an investigator? Follow the money.
Absolutely.
Every time.
All right, let's move on to your reporting on the Major League Baseball Players Association. As someone who's covered baseball for a long time and is kind of interested in MLBPA politics, it's funny, Greg Boris tweeted out just after your story came out, and of course, Greg, formerly with the Players Association, he made a point that I kind of wondered about. It's nice, morally, it's nice that the minor league players are now getting some protection from the Major League Baseball Players Association. But man, it really did change the internal dynamics of that organization, bringing all these minor leaguers in, didn't it?
Completely. And it wasn't just bringing in the 5,500 minor leaguers that the MLBPA did. It was giving them 34 seats on the executive board. Beforehand, there were 38 votes that counted. One rep for each team and 8 people on the executive subcommittee, which is essentially like the big board, the confidants to the executive director. And now it is 72. 11 of those minor league seats are unfilled at this point. So it's technically 61. But the share of vote for major league players has been diluted considerably. And there is a not unreasonable possibility, Jeff, that Harry Marino, who started this by whipping up support among major league player reps to go along with those 23 minor league player reps he has because he was the force behind their unionization, it is not inconceivable that he has the numbers right now where if they were to take a vote that Tony Clark could be ousted. Like, that's a realistic possibility at this point. And he could be ousted with as few as 8 votes from MLB's 38.
Yeah.
Like, that's a wild thing to think, that barely 20% of the major league player reps is all that it takes to get rid of an executive director. But that's the, that's the state of play right now.
What do we know about Harry Marino? We know he's young. He's 33 years old. You're right. He is the guy that sort of spearheaded the whole the legal case for minor league players. And again, to make clear, within their rights. I mean, that was the way Major League Baseball treated minor league players was obscene, given the billions of dollars this industry has. But he's 33 years old. Like we're not talking Marvin Miller or Donald Fear here.
An extent talking Donald Fear, though, because he was 35 when he took over. Now, he had worked at the Players Association for 6 years before that in a high position. Harry Marino worked at the Players Association for 10 and a half months before he left because of conflicts with the very people who he's calling into question with this campaign. And I think the point that he's trying to make are that leadership is not good right now, that the direction of the Players Association is going the wrong way, and that the spending there, and this has been echoed by some other players, is problematic. Mm-hmm. And it is a classic attempt at a leadership regime change. That being said, we don't see stuff like this at the MLBPA. I think this speaks to the potential weakness that's there. Like, can you imagine if someone tried to make a move on Marvin Miller or Don Fear?
Oh, no, I mean, I can't. Even Michael Weiner.
They would have been disappeared.
Yeah, no. We'd be looking in the swamps in New Jersey for them if that if that was the case. Very quickly, because I know we're up against the clock here. What do you think the odds are that in another 3 weeks, Tony Clark is head of the association?
Did you just say what are the odds?
Yeah, of course. This segment spot to you, but you know what I mean. What do you think the chances are? 3 weeks time, 2 weeks, 3 weeks time, Tony Clark is head of the association.
I don't think it's going to take that long. I think this thing's barreling toward playing out very quickly, and I think as much reporting as I've done on this, and as much as I'd like to believe I'm plugged in thinking of a lot of the people who are involved in this entire thing, I also know that votes change very quickly.
Yep.
And that you can have the votes right now, and then in 10 minutes after one person gives an impassioned speech, you might not have them. So that to me is the fascinating part of this. We are at a point right now, though, that I think the rubber's starting to meet the road, and I think there are going to be answers to this quicker than it'll take a while.
Mr. Passon, we're going to let you run. Thanks for doing this terrific reporting, as always, my friend. Be well.
Thank you, Jeff. Take it easy, pal.
Jeff Passon of ESPN. I've tweeted out a link to his story on the Major League Baseball Players Association. Okay, and again, most of you know the history of the Major League Baseball Players Association. Marvin Miller, a well-regarded labor organizer. Basically, the Major League Baseball Players Association provided the template for every sports union out there. It's long been considered to be the most powerful. I mean, it had an amazing run of success in terms of collective bargaining. The ground in the game has kind of shifted in the last 10 years or so, and it appears as if the owners, with Rob Manfred leading the way, have sort of gradually regained more and more control of the game. But it's still generally considered to be a very powerful, well-organized players association. And to see essentially what amounts to a coup be mounted by this Harry Marino is remarkable. It's a fascinating story. And again, I've tweeted out a link to that. And, you know, one of the secrets of Major League Baseball, when it has labor peace, and Bud Selig used to say this, as much as, you know, the owners would love to screw the players at every turn, when you are negotiating, it helps to know that the person sitting across the table from you is leading a unified group, because it does tend to make reaching agreement easier. It doesn't mean you're going to win. It's probably easier to, quote unquote, win a negotiation if your opponent is not united. But if your opponent is united and you know that the person sitting across the table from you speaks for everybody, it certainly cuts through the BS and makes it a little easier to reach a final decision. That's it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow. Mr. Barker will be with me in studio. 6 o'clock tonight, Blue Jays baseball against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Have a great day.